prisoners at the Siege of Antwerp, 4 April 1585. Shouting warnings, Latham cantered to the main bridge, the cart bucketing. No one turned his way. All were watching the large ship Hope glide ever closer, while a few near Farnese's party, after a sudden agitation, led the governor and his aides ashore. Trumpets summoned reinforcements. Seconds scrolled by, but felt like hours. Latham dismounted and ran, puffing, along the road beside the fort wall, waving and shouting. But everyone on ramparts, or aiming their guns through windows, stared at the bridge. When he reached the sentries, he babbled the danger. "Self-detonating bomb ship," he tried to explain. "Brain sick," a sentry concluded, hauling him through the doorway and shoving him behind the stone wall. He fell, winded. A sentry kicked him and told him not to move or he'd be skewered. Hope struck close to where Farnese was moments earlier, and nothing happened. Latham heard a sentry cheer that soldiers were on the deck, yells from the soldiers that the smoke was wispy and there was no wick, and there was a huge strange stone cone on it. Hearing the ping of axes on stone and suspenseful quiet, he got up and crouched by the fort door. The sentries had gone to the bridge. Then a tall, wild glare obliterated the stars with a calamitous roar, as if the world's every cannon fired at once. The earth heaved and shook and the air filled with missiles. Latham saw chunks of rampart stone hit the ground around him, throwing up choking dust, stone shards, and earth. Chain shot, stone slabs, marble pieces, plow coulters, spearheads, pike blades, cannonballs. Anything that could crush, shatter, or dismember flew, finding targets in screaming flesh, tents, walls, and wooden stables. Latham looked up. Severed limbs swirled like a flock of migrating birds. A whimpering page boy crawled to him. He held the boy close, but he twisted away in panic and ran for the stable beyond the fort. A hurtling, armor-plated leg decapitated him, sending his little head with its bright blue pin-fastened cap over the wall. Latham fainted. When he came to, it was quieter, the air still. He patted himself, chest, thighs, shoulders, ankles, head. To his amazement, he was whole. Unsteadily, he stood, grabbed a lantern, and walked through the doorless entrance. On the way to the bank, he passed bodies. Somewhere a dog moaned, and he kicked away a cat clawing his torn hose. A strange sky greeted him. Sparse stars winking through streaky clouds that moved in an indifferent procession from west to east. It was moonless with Mars and orange blur. The banked clouds that had unleashed rain earlier had moved north, blackening that part of the sky, while around him smoke twisted up in tendrils as if to meet the gauze above. Glowing red blobs on the river marked fireships burning out. Latham seemed to be alone, the sole survivor of Giambelli's apocalypse. The ship, the blockhouse, the men, many barges, and large sections of the plank road were gone, a huge breach in the bridge smouldering. Picking his way around embers, wood bits, torn pennants and debris, he found a stable part of a barge and peered down. There were countless bodies, some floating face up, some snared in nets or jammed against the pile, some being swept downriver. Most horrible was the detached arm wrapped around a piece of plank, identifiable only by scraps of insignia of half an eagle clutching half a red castle, 9th Company colours. Not everyone was dead. Two wounded men cried out. Latham put his hand in the water, then snatched it back. It was scalding. He took off his shirt and lowered it, pulling the nearest man onto their tiny patch of stability.